Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like filling out basketball brackets. Too many choices, too much noise, and no one wants a busted budget. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break down real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Make smarter financial plays today. No luck required. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Is there any part of you that thinks the Yankees could be a mess this season?
They're starting out as a mess. There's no question about that. The question is can they right the ship and can they get off to a reasonably good start? I think after, 30 games, if they were 500, that would be amazing for them, because going into the season, do you feel like this level of confidence that we had? I had it, and then all of a sudden, you start losing piece after piece after piece. So if you think of a chess set, and you think about, you're losing your starting pitcher,
yeah,
your number one guy, your ace. He's the guy that sets the tone for the entire franchise. And then you're losing your DH, who, is about 35 home runs a year. And then all of a sudden, you lose Juan Soto in the offseason. I mean, that's three major pieces off of your chessboard that you have lost. And what are you replacing them with?
And how about Luis Gil? Like, it all started with Gil and Stanton. And you're thinking at the time, when all that happened, people are like, it's okay. Gil will be back. Stanton, as long as he's back for, August and he's ready for the postseason, it'll be fine. But then Cole gets hurt. Then Clark Schmidt gets hurt. Then Paul Goldschmidt is hurt. And you start to wonder, like, how many of these, jabs can this team take and punches to the face can they take? And we still believe that they're going to be like a 90-win team.
Don't you feel like first base has been like a
it's been tough.
It's just been one player after the next that has a good reputation and then all of a sudden comes here and gets hurt and is like an afterthought.
And I don't want to play the what-if game, but boy, if Anthony Rizzo didn't get that concussion. Because Anthony Rizzo was playing well over there, and he was a damn good ball player, and he was never the same when he came back. He just wasn't.
You got him, you've had Joey Gallo over there, you've had a series. Greg was, who was the other guy?
Greg Bird?
Yes.
Ben Rice.
Ben Rice. I mean, Ben's still here, but I don't know. It's a weird, the level of concern for the Yankees has gone from, mild concern to like extreme starting this season. And I know that I'm sure Yankee fans don't want to hear that, but I'm sure that they realize what they've already lost and it's hanging by a thread. And that's why, even though the American League is the weaker of the two leagues, I believe, and they would have a chance if they were totally healthy to win the American League and go back to the World Series, on the current set of injury circumstances, that now is unlikely.
I agree. And I wasn't concerned at all about this team. I actually kind of liked what they did in the offseason, even though they lost Juan Soto. But all these things add up, and you really do, even though they've got Aaron Judge, who I think is the best player in the game, right there with Ohtani, 1-1A, call him whatever you want. This, to me, is a really rough start. Now, conversely, it's interesting, because you talk about the weaker American League, which should make you feel a little bit more positive, even as they are losing player after player. The feeling around the Mets, and I understand why, with the run they had last year, you want to build on that and you want to get back there and hopefully even advance and get to the World Series, and they bring in Juan Soto and they've done some things, It's a difficult division and a difficult league.
Right, and a very tough league. And the Dodgers are showing it again as they're going to go 2-0, it looks like.
Yeah, they're up 6-3 at the,
right,
at the moment.
I would just say this. The biggest problem with the Mets right now is catcher and second base. Like, what are they doing? What's going to happen there? Their lineup is still, the bulk of their lineup is still very much intact. It should be a very explosive offensive lineup. I don't think that that's going to change, but they still have issues at two very, very important defensive positions. And they have to make a decision at second base. I don't necessarily know that they are ready to make that decision.
Well, I do think it'll be Brett Beatty to start. Oof. I don't know that, but I think it'll be him. And maybe we've seen the last of Jeff McNeil. I don't know. My biggest concern for them is what wasn't and didn't turn out to be one last year. That's the pitching. And I don't believe that you should be spending $40 million a year on a pitcher anymore in this day and age. But with even their injuries that they've taken, and I don't know, is Senga going to be all the way back?
I just kind of like David Stern's approach. I think it's the most realistic approach that we have had as a general manager in a long time.
I just wish Minaya was healthy. And I know he'll be there by May. I guess they're saying May. It's just, to your point, they are playing in such a more difficult division and league than what the Yankees are. It's almost as if, I don't want to say the Yankees could stub their toe and they'll be okay, because I think the Blue Jays will be better. I think the Red Sox, I don't necessarily know that. But I feel like they can linger and hang around longer until they get healthier. As where the Mets, I don't know if the Mets get out to a bad start this year like they did last year. You can repeat what you did a year ago. And I just think it's a good division and a good league that there's going to be a lot of teams. We did the odds yesterday. The Mets were not above the Braves or the Dodgers, and I think the Phillies were right there with them in terms of what Vegas thinks. And I bring that up because Vegas is right a lot of times.
You know, which basically goes to show you that they just spent $750 million on one player.
Yeah.
And it goes to show you what Vegas and all the different sports betting platforms think. They think that the Mets are a good team, but they don't think that they're a great team. Now, I kind of go against that just simply because putting Juan Soto in this lineup is going to be better for both Francisco Lindor and Pete Alonso. And Lindor showed you he could carry a team last year. So if you put Juan Soto in there, and Juan Soto has the effect on the players around him this year as he did last year, as he did the year before in San Diego, the years before that in Washington, then you got to believe as a Met fan that the offense is going to be a significant upgrade. And, this is going to be a team that should be able to, win games 6-5. You know, they have a quality bullpen. That's the other thing that, nobody's really talking about. And as long as Edwin Diaz gets back to being the Edwin Diaz that we know, then I think that, they are in a better position than where the Yankees are right now, just simply because of the injuries and because of the addition of Juan Soto.
And I do agree with you, Lindor. And Alonso will be interesting to me because it will tell you if he goes out and has a big season, here will be the question. Is it the Soto effect or is it the effect of the contract not hanging over his head at least this year? Because you can make every case that both will work big time in his favor and he gets back to, he numbers wise, it was okay last year, but I also know we watched it and it wasn't good. And you would like to see him get to where he was. And you mentioned Diaz. I agree with you. If Diaz gets back to being Diaz, that's a big part of it. Are you 100% certain that Diaz is going to be Diaz?
Listen, these guys go, only Mariano was great. Trevor Hoffman was great too, but now, when you think of closers and you talk about consistency, there are very few and far between of those guys. So he had a little bit of an off year coming off of an injury. Timing wasn't great. I would say that a year in, back full spring training, everything ready to rock and roll, I don't see why he will not be great again.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Hey, everyone. Do you wish you were somewhere sunny, but are dealing with another crazy spring? There's a solution to get that feeling. I'm grabbing a Hawaiian Breeze 5-Hour Energy and escaping there in my mind. Sports fans, ever stay up late for the game and drag the next day? A 5-Hour Energy shot will fix that no problem. 5-Hour Energy's website has tons of flavors, over 15 to choose from. Watermelon, Tropical Burst, Blue Raspberry, and even hard-to-find ones like Strawberry Lemonade and Extra Strength Fan Fuel. There's a flavor for everyone. You can even build your own 12 or 24-pack and have it delivered. Or grab a shot at your local store. They're everywhere. And it's basketball season. My schedule is packed, and I don't want to miss a second, so I grab a 5-Hour Energy shot. They're perfect for back-to-back games or when my team plays late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going through the game and the next morning. Visit 5hourenergy.com for deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like filling out basketball brackets. Too many choices, too much noise, and no one wants a busted budget. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break down real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Make smarter financial plays today. No luck required. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
As my buddy Mikey K has often told me this season, bet the Johnnies in the second half. Because they usually start out slow, and then the second half, they just absolutely just devour, who they're playing against. And certainly, you know, this was the case last night. In this game, you know, might as well forget about it, because now we have a matchup of Pitino and John Calipari. That is St. John's and Arkansas, because Arkansas was one of the upset winners yesterday. And by my count, we had four upset winners yesterday.
10-7 is not really an upset, but I know what you're saying.
It's an upset. And, obviously Drake beating Missouri is an upset. McNeese State, obviously. Most people thought McNeese State would win. They beat Clemson. Clemson scored, 13 points in the first half?
13 points in the first.
They were horrendous.
20 minutes of basketball. A power conference team scored 13 points
in
the
half. That had to be one of the... It may be one of the worst first half performances in the history of the NCAA tournament. If it is or not, but that had to be.
Did you see their first half 3-point shooting?
Oh, it was brutal.
1 for 15.
Yeah, it was brutal.
Let's keep hoisting them up, guys.
So again, forget about defense. If the other team can't hit their shots, it doesn't really matter. Of course, you had Creighton, who actually had a very impressive performance against Louisville. That's a 9-8. And then, like we said, Arkansas over Kansas last night. And, you know, interesting, you know, John Calipari and Rick Pitino matching up on Saturday it's just amazing.
Sets up for a fun day. There's no question about it. And the one thing, I know there's not much to discuss with the Omaha game, but what I would say is last night for me was a little bit of a microcosm of what St. John's has been all season. You know, I got to do that game up at Storrs when they played UConn that Friday night in February, and I was blown away by the way they share the ball. And I know it's Omaha, and I told you yesterday I expected them to blow them out as they did, but even last night, their ball movement, we talk about their defense at nauseam, and rightly so, and we will continue to do that, I'm sure. But the way they share the game, you know,
always making the extra pass, always trying to find the open guy. R.J. Lewis is hitting threes, and if you look at them, it looked like teams that play the Knicks. All of them are wide open because they make the extra pass and find himself in space, and it's impressive.
It's the underrated part of the St. John's team. The most talked about parts of the St. John's team are their free throws and their three-point attempts.
In terms of what could get them in this tournament, yes.
Right, exactly. That's the one negative thing about them. You know, you play Omaha, you should beat Omaha. You should just absolutely steamroll them. That's what they did in the second half, and that's what, you know, you could easily expect in just watching some of those highlights. You know, those kids were overwhelmed.
Sure.
So the underrated part of what Rick Pitino does is the way that his offense does flow, mm-hmm. and the way that those kids have bought into it. And, you know, even when you watch them go through the Big East tournament, how many times did they have somebody open under the basket that they found?
Yep.
And it was an easy dunk or lay-in, and or there was a putback in some way, shape, or form, because they do crash the offensive boards and the defensive boards. So, hey, look, it was expected. They were a little jittery at the beginning. And that was to be expected as well.
Yeah, Pitino said a little tight to get started.
But now they're in. Now they're in, and now they're up and running. And it's going to be 24 hours. It's going to be Pitino Calipari, and they're going to be talking so wonderfully about each other over the next all day today. It's going to be this is the greatest thing. These two great coaches, these two great friends, you know, going to get, you know, after each other. This is going to be a great game, and hopefully it will be. But I would say that you have two coaches that know each other about as well as anybody can know an opposing coach. So that's a plus and it's a minus. But at the end of the day, you know it's going to be intense.
It should be fun. And the questions came rapidly after that game last night, which you kind of expected. And part of that, too, was Pitino on, what's today, Friday? So I guess this was on Wednesday when he did his press conference, kind of getting ready for this game in the tournament. Someone had asked him, like, who his best biggest rival was. And he went into this whole thing about Jim Calhoun. And
how they hated each other.
Yeah, how, you know, respected
back in the day when
another.
They first started.
Yeah, when they were at small schools, Northeastern or whatever it was, and how they really disliked each other. So then last night, the conversation very quickly, as you would expect, turned into, you know, you talked about Calhoun, what about Calipari? And it is fun, you know, it's interesting because when you think of Calipari for such a long time, you think Kentucky. When you think of Pitino, obviously, lately, he's been all over the place after Louisville, which we know, out of the country in different spots, Iona before he comes here. But you're talking about two titans in the game. And it shapes up to be a lot of fun. And it's in Providence where Pitino was the coach.
Oh, it's crazy. It's got everything.
There's so many storylines. Like, if you're a writer that's covering this, you can just cherry pick what type of story you want to write because it's all very interesting and fun.
And by the way, that should be one hell of a crowd at that game.
I would think so.
This is like the epitome of what college basketball is all about. These two maniac head coaches going after each other. These kids playing 40 minutes of fury, as you know. And they're going to be in each other's face. And it's going to be, hopefully it's going to live up to the billing. That's what you want. You know, I want a buzzer beater at the end. I want overtime. I want it all.
So that brings up another point about the St. John's team. Because while we talk a lot about their four losses by only 7 points, they've also won a lot of close games this year.
Yeah.
And you talk about being battle tested. I would expect that this game will be much closer than 30 points. But if you're a St. John's fan, you got to feel really good that they're going to figure out a way to get it done in the end. Because, again, you look through their, they've had a lot of blowout wins, of course, but they've had some games that, man, overtime games where they make the big plays in the big spot, talking about big shots at the end of, not fourth quarter, second halves. It's almost as if they're ready for the moment. They kind of shook off the tournament nerves yesterday, and away we go.
How about the fact that you have Kansas, Louisville, Clemson, and Missouri all losing?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Louisville and Kansas, those are, you know, basketball hotbeds.
I didn't realize this until I heard it yesterday. Kansas was the preseason number one.
Yeah, yeah. Bill Self is an amazing coach. I mean, and they have one of the great programs in the history of college basketball, as you know. It's like right up there with Duke and North Carolina and UCLA. You know, there are the preeminent teams when it comes to college basketball, and Kansas has always been one of those teams, and Bill Self has been a great coach.
But there's no way they're happy there right now. Preseason number one, they were unranked at the end.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how their whole season, I don't know if they had injuries or what. I'm not going to sit here and tell you I know anything about that, but I will tell you that there's history there. I've interviewed Bill Self a couple times. He's a really, you know, he's your typical hardcore NCAA basketball coach.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that is a hey, look, they came in as a 7. That wasn't that high of a seed, and you know, the fact that they lost is not shocking. The interesting thing to me really is McNeese State, where a lot of people actually had them winning yesterday.
Yep.
And this was the one, 12-5 situation where people thought this would be a chance for a total upset, and they got it. And now McNeese State goes against Purdue, who won their game. And Purdue's a pretty good team.
Purdue's really good. And I didn't think they played great yesterday, but they still came away with a win. Purdue, top to bottom, is as good as I've seen all season long. And as we talked about yesterday, those kids have been there collectively together for the last 3 years. So it's about as cohesive a unit as you're going to see. But yeah, you hit on it. Drake winning, McNeese winning, those were two teams that the experts loved as experts, as upsets. The other one, which they didn't win, was Yale. They thought Yale would have a good chance to win
just
yesterday.
They're a good three-point shooting team.
Yeah, and they've pulled off some wins in the tournament. Yes. James Jones, a good coach, but Texas A&M was better. But, yeah, people nailed the other two. And so, yeah, it's interesting. It was a fun day. It wasn't I wouldn't call it one of the best days, because I know there's a couple of upsets, but for the most part, it kind of went as planned.
Chalk. It was a little chalky.
Yeah. And I do think the fact, so I'll give the NCAA tournament scheduling credit for one thing and a little discredit for the other. Number one, the fact that the St. John's first two games are in Providence is kind of cool, because if you're a St. John's fan, it's a three-hour drive up 95, and now if you went last night, great, you can stay and you get this big matchup with Arkansas tomorrow at 2:40, which is kind of fun. All good. The problem is, if St. John's has captured the New York fan right now, putting that game on last night at 10 o'clock, and we talked about it, that was kind of disappointing, and that to me is where it's kind of, I felt like you were kind of waiting for St. John's. By the time you get there, all these games have been played. You know, it was late.
I think they play Saturday now at
2:40. Yep.
2:40.
You hit on a couple of things when Chris was in here. The night, you know, you can talk about their road trip. Not a great trip. Fair enough. And I think that's not an easy trip for a lot of teams that go out west, regardless of who you're playing. And I thought the game at Golden State was an opportunity. You had the, I guess you would call it, bad blood between Karl Anthony Towns, the Draymond Green comments.
Well, Draymond Green called him out and said that he was missing a game on purpose.
Because of Jimmy Butler.
Because he didn't want to play against Jimmy Butler, his former teammate in Minnesota, where Tom Thibodeau was the head coach. And maybe there's some truth to that, but in reality, there was a major event that happened in Kat's life with, yes, his girlfriend and her best friend who died of cancer.
Yes.
And he had to go to the funeral, so you know, Draymond Green did not apologize about that, but he did say that it's unfortunate that that took place in his life. He was sorry that that had happened, but, you know, my podcast must go on.
Correct.
Whatever the hell that means.
And then I think, and this is the sense I got, especially listening to the radio station a little bit yesterday when I did, listening to Knick fans, and I don't disagree with them. The idea after the game that you've got Tom Thibodeau going up to Draymond Green afterwards, and not to yell at him, but it looked pleasant. You've got Mikal Bridges going up to him afterwards. If I'm Karl Anthony Towns, I don't know. That would bother me.
Well, Karl Anthony Towns went off the court. He didn't even shake anybody's hands. Hey, look, teammates got to stick together. At the end of the day, it's all about those guys having each other's back. And that is not a good look.
No, it's not. I think it's terrible.
And that's what everybody's now focusing on. Does this team have the edge? Does this team have the chip on its shoulder that it had last year that gave you more than you expected after the injuries had taken place? I do think that this team is a really good team, and I think that they're going to get to the second round, and I think they're going to get knocked out.
You might be right. And what made them so good last year is why I think St. John's, and everyone would agree, St. John's is so good this year. They played defense, and they played defense for 40 minutes. And last year I'm sure there were other teams that were good defensively. But when you thought NBA defense last year, you thought the Knicks. Now, the conversation early on in this season, when they were kind of struggling to defend but were outscoring teams, was, well, it's not the playoffs.
One of the best offensive teams in the league.
No doubt. And they can score with anybody, and I still do believe that.
Until they got into the better top-tier teams in the league.
Right.
And they don't defend a three-point shot at all. And they have a hard time preventing pick and rolls for some reason. It's the most basic of plays in all of sports, is the give and go, the pick and roll, that kind of thing. And for some reason, this team really has a hard time stopping Cleveland from doing that, and they have a hard time stopping Boston from dropping threes on their ass.
No question. And then the big question will be when we do get to the playoffs, and Jalen Brunson's out another week or two. It might not be the worst thing in the world that he misses 4 weeks of the season. He should, if anything, it will give him a little bit fresher legs, I would think, to maybe finish out the season better. Injury is what it is. I know last year, to me, he wasn't gassed to get injured, and hopefully that doesn't happen again when he comes back. But the question would be, can they turn it on defensively? Because while a couple of guys aren't here, you still have pieces that should be good enough on the defensive
end. All right, how about these last three stories? You have Mikal Bridges going to Tom Thibodeau. Maybe you could play the bench a little bit more. You have this situation with Draymond Green and Karl Anthony Towns and his teammates completely going over and hugging Draymond Green. And then on top of all of that, you got Jalen Brunson, who's hurt.
Right now, it's not great right now.
But this is kind of part of the adversity that you deal with as a
exactly.
team. But the one thing that would bother me, and I don't know if it bothers Carl Anthony Towns, you would have to ask him this, but my teammates going over and hugging that guy who's just blasted me for whatever reason, and I don't think it's the first time that he's blasted him. I'm sure that he's questioned him openly in other areas as well. Meaning that the word, he's kind of intimating that he's soft. Mm-hmm. That's what he's intimating.
It's exactly what he's intimating, that he was afraid of the battle with Jimmy Butler because they've had a past experience together. I don't think, having watched him, so that was the knock on him, was that he was a soft player. But watching him this season as I have, I think because he shoots so many threes, he's maybe not on the interior like you'd like a 7-footer to be. Doesn't mean he's not great at what he does. He's also a rebounding machine.
Now, they've been better defensively since Mitchell Robinson's come back. But again, they haven't been whole all year. Somebody's been out. Somebody's been hurt. And now it's Jalen Brunson who's
right.
out.
Robinson comes back, Brunson out. But if you get him back in time, and so the last thing I want to hit on what you said was, last year a likable group, and I totally agreed with you on that when you looked at the way the team came together, the ties they had prior, it worked. They didn't get as far as they probably could have because of injury. I still think it's a likable team. I do. And I'm outside looking in. I'm not even a Knicks fan. I do believe the podcast means something when you see them in a different form and setting. I don't think that it's an unlikable team, but I will tell you, it feels like they're a little bit broken for the first time in a while.
I just, the podcast is fine. I have no problem with it. I really don't. And they're not controversial by any stretch of the imagination.
They're fun.
They're more humorous. They give you a little bit better feel of who the Knicks are, and the fact that James Dolan went on with them was pretty cool, I thought. But at the end of this season, they're going to find out exactly what expectations mean.
Agreed.
And I would not be surprised if they get housed by either Cleveland or Boston in the second round, or they lose in the first round to somebody.
Well, that would be a disaster.
They are going to get booed.
No, losing in the first round is not acceptable. And I don't even think losing in the second round to a Knicks fan this year would be acceptable.
I just want to tell them that there are serious, serious expectations for them. And Jalen and Josh could talk about it on their podcast all they want about playing together and playing as a team and coming together as a team, and we're still a work in progress. Hey, wait a minute, time out. We are 3/4 of the way into the season.
For sure.
The time to come together is past. It is totally past. And this team has spent a lot of assets, a lot of money. Both Karl Anthony Towns and OG Anunoby are making a ton of dough.
Yeah.
As is, Jalen Brunson. Good for them. They all deserve it. But are they good enough? Are they truly good enough and committed enough to play the defense that's going to be required to beat possibly both of these teams in the playoffs, that they can get that far?
Well, they would have to. Yeah, likely they would have to, because
think about this. I'm sorry, Jerry. Think about that. Let's just say they play Boston in the second round,
mm-hmm.
and somehow they beat Boston. Then they got to play Cleveland in the final round, the Eastern Conference Championships. Let's say they beat them. Then they got to go on and most likely play Oklahoma City Thunder. And these are three teams that they haven't beaten all season long.
You're right.
So the chances of them getting there and going to a championship, while I appreciate what Leon Rose has done with this team, and it's going to be one of the better regular seasons we've had in a long time, I just don't see their path to a championship.
Well, all right, so then what other moves are there to be made? I mean, this team is damn good right now.
Their core players are going to stay together.
You have to go out and beat the teams in front of you. As it sits right now, you'd play Detroit in the first round, which, by the way, not a cakewalk.
That's not going to be easy either.
Not easy. There's no question that's not easy. And, yeah, you're going to be likely faced with Boston in that second round.
I'll tell you what, if they mail it in against Detroit, if in fact the two they play.
No, I don't think so. That's not this team.
I don't think it is either. I'm just putting out the warning signals. And they're going to have to work on their bench next year. They're going to have to figure out depth issues. And, you know, what could I tell you? They're probably as good as they're going to get. And then, unfortunately, there are at least three teams that are better than I'm significantly better than them.
But do you not think, and I know this is revisionist history, if Jalen Brunson doesn't get hurt last year, you don't think they have an opportunity to go further than they did?
No, because they were
better than the Pacers.
You lost OG, you lost Julius Randle, I mean, and you lost Mitchell Robinson. That's all the depth that you had going into the playoffs last year. Then I would say, yeah, you would have had a chance. You know why? Because they could muck up a game last year. And they would play defense.
And they did.
And they were tough.
And that's been the question. Will they do that when we get to the postseason and revert back to that defensive team? And I don't know that they will. I think they're going to have to. I don't know that. Because here's what we do know. They can put up 130 points any night they need to.
Against Midland or, you know, two-tier teams. But they're not going to do it against the one-tier. You know, the Giants is going to be an interesting thing, what they're going to do with the third pick, depending on what the Browns and what Tennessee does. And like we were talking about Todd McShay yesterday saying that Shedeur Sanders could be in play for the Cleveland Browns.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, if Tennessee takes Cam Ward and the Cleveland Browns basically take Shedeur Sanders, if you are the New York Giants, you will have the opportunity to draft the best player in this draft. Most people, and I'm one of those people, think it's Abdul Carter from Penn State. That guy is a game-changing edge rusher, and we can all see it on the field. Now, I know he's got a foot issue that he had at the combine, and then the next best player would probably be Travis Hunter. I don't know who or what you would think would be more apropos for the Giants. I guess they would love to get another cornerback back there that would be somebody that would be a ball hawk like Travis is.
And would he play both ways like he did in college?
I think they'd start him on defense and then they'd have packages for him on offense.
Like what the Cowboys did with Deion back in the day.
I think that's what they would try to do, but maybe a little bit more on offense. Mm. Maybe, you know, 10, 12 plays, and then he wouldn't come off the field at all on defense, assuming he can handle both. But he's got to learn the pro game first at one position. Let him learn that, and then as he gets more comfortable, then you could explore doing something else on the offensive side of the ball.
All right, so you mentioned Shedeur Sanders, and this is where my confusion comes into play. You look at YouTube just the way I do. You look at Twitter, like X, like we all do, and you, more and more every day, you see one thing as fact, and then the opposite is fact. And you don't know what to believe anymore. And I'm not even joking. There's been this push about, you know, eat all protein, no carbs, and you're going to be healthy, and you're going to be fit, and it's good for your heart. Meantime, on my YouTube feed, lately I'm getting, carbs are your friend. Don't listen to the people that tell you carbs are bad. So I bring it back to football. Yesterday, I don't know where I guess it was ESPN. I saw Mel Kiper Jr.
Okay.
Now, for the last, I don't know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I have seen Shedeur Sanders anywhere in these mock drafts going from 2 all the way down to late in the first round.
Yeah.
I have seen some say Shedeur Sanders is going to be a good pro, to some saying stay away from him, he's not an NFL quarterback. And then yesterday, Mel Kiper, I think, does a pretty good job. Kind of knows the college game, I think. It's what he does for a living. Literally said, he is the best player in this draft. Who is... What?
Yeah, I don't know. I called him
a baller. Called him, you know, talked about the, you know, the way he grew up, that head-wise, in the, you know, in terms of being able to handle this market, if it was the
Giants,
which
is what I've been saying. That's the one thing I know that he can do. He can handle it.
So can he? Should he or shouldn't be? Because then you've got people that say the Giants would be lucky if Sanders and Ward go 1-2 so they don't get forced into taking quarterback who's not going to be that good. Others are like, they got to trade up to number 1 to get Cam Ward because he's you want to talk about confusion at the highest of levels.
Right, because there's no, like last year everybody knew Caleb, Jaden, and Drake. They knew. They knew the three. They knew that they were going to go 3. They knew that all the teams at the top of the draft needed quarterbacks. I would say that both teams at the top of this draft, or all three teams at the top of this draft, all need a young quarterback to build around. The question is, I think most people do not believe that either one of these guys would be drafted ahead of anyone that was drafted last year, including Bo Nix.
Okay.
All right, and Bo Nix fell, and a number of these teams passed on Bo Nix, but Bo Nix ended up going with the right coach.
Mm-hmm.
He is in the right spot for who he is, the type of athlete he is.
Well, fit is everything, as we've talked about with Darnold, too.
And I just think that whoever the Giants draft, if it is a quarterback, it's going to be a disaster. Only because there'll be new coaches and a new GM here next year, if that kid has to play.
Right. Understood.
That's kind of the, like we keep saying, the conundrum that the Giants are in. They need to win now, and they're not going to. There's no Jaden Daniels in this draft.
Well, they need to show that they're a winning team. I don't necessarily think that if they don't go to the playoffs that they're, like, to me, if the Giants ended up with forget about Aaron Rodgers, let's say it is Jameis Winston, and let's just say, even like, to me, 6-11 can look one way and 6-11 can look another way. If you're losing close games and you're competitive and it looks like the team is starting to play better, and then you've got a young quarterback and waiting in the wings, that's different than being 5-12 and looking like crap.
If you told me they were 7-10 or 8-9 and they showed some signs of development with a quarterback, then I would say, okay, these guys are going to stay. But we've been around here too long, Jerry, watching this, and we have seen over and over and over again, both of these teams, you know, get impatient, end up firing people, hiring the wrong people, thinking that they hired the right people in the first place, and then just turning around and firing them again. And I think it took a lot for John Mara especially after what happened with Saquon Barkley, not to go in there and just absolutely torch the place again.
But if you didn't let them go last year, don't you almost have to give them 2 years with this third pick?
It all depends on how it looks, man. And I'm assuming that they're all in there discussing, is this the right guy? Is this the guy that we want leading our team? If he's there, do we take him? Do we trade up? Do we use assets to get him? You know, if they use assets to go up and get the quarterback that they want, and that quarterback doesn't turn out to be the guy that they think he is, then they're going to be out of a job.
Right. Understood. I want to clarify, too. I don't think Kuiper said the best player in the draft. I think he said Shedeur Sanders was the best quarterback in the draft, is what he said.
Drop-back quarterback, pocket passer, you know, all the things that Todd McShay said. I could see that. I mean, but then again, would he have been chosen before any of the guys that went in the first round last year?
Well, no, and we discussed that. I don't think so. And then here's the other thing about the draft, and I've said this too over and over. I'm going to give you a little quiz, Eddie. Al, you can jump on this. I'm going to set the over-under at 2.5. 2021, not that long ago, do we agree?
Yeah.
Okay, 4 years ago. How many players that the Giants drafted in 2021 do you think are still on their roster? Not 2016, 2021. Over-under 2.5.
Under.
That is true. Al, what do you think? You agree?
I will go under as well.
Not only is it under, the answer is zero. Nobody.
And
when Ojulari went to the Eagles,
right, it's not these guys. These guys didn't do the drafting.
I understand, but what I saw the article in the paper yesterday. So then, what I did, I went down this rabbit hole of trying to find draft analysis. I mean, we're gushing about Kadarius Toney. What a pick! Unbelievable. Ojulari, what a steal! And I told you I liked him. I thought he was a good player. I would have resigned him, but he goes to Philly. None of their guys are here 4 years later.
Yeah.
And we sit here and go bonkers. What are they going to? We can't get rid of a fourth round draft pick. Why not? He's not going to be on your team in 3 years anyway.
Didn't we talk about it 2 days ago? The amount of guys that end up signing second contracts with their teams.
20% or something?
Yeah. And the lower the draft pick, the less likely it is as you go down the draft. And then a free agent coming out of college this year that they sign, maybe one or two of them make it, maybe about a handful are on the practice squad.
Right, most don't, though.
Most don't.
And I know it's the NFL. I know we love it, and I know the NFL is king right now. But when it comes to the draft, we're all morons, honestly. No one knows what they're looking at. Nobody knows who's going to. You know, you talk about can't miss with Abdul Carter, and I sure, sounds good to me. Brian Bosworth back in the day was a can't-miss player. And what happened to him?
So was Tony Mandrich.
Tony Mandrich. Left tackle. This guy's going to be.
Leaf.
Right. And yeah. And you talk about guys that are picked so high.
It's littered with a million guys that don't make it for whatever reason. There's all sorts of reasons why. Injury is some of it. Some of it's the player himself. Some of it is he and the coach don't get along, or he doesn't fit the scheme that the coach is running on offense and defense, doesn't want to play special teams. There's a million reasons why guys don't make it, and it's usually only one reason why they do make it, and that's because they don't want to fail.
That, and they end up with the right coach and the right system.
But they don't
want
to fail. They just don't want to fail. They just are not going to give in. They're going to bust their ass the whole time and do whatever the coach is asking. And a coach can coach a guy like that.
Well, we'll see who those guys are this year.
The more I actually looked around and read the newspaper and watched game highlights and watched coach press conferences, as I do when I get in at 4 o'clock in the morning, I actually realized that I'm going to let a guy go. I am going to let a guy get some crap off his chest, because here's what I noticed when I was watching highlights of the Rangers and Flames last night. 13 shots on goal for your New York 13 in a 60-minute hockey game. And so I'm going to let you do what you have to do before we get into the other stuff, because I know it is eating at you. But I'm also going to say this. Here's my question for you, Mr. Boomer Esiason, to start the show. Lack of effort or lack of execution last night?
Both, actually. You know, and you can see it. And it was pathetic. And it was embarrassing. And it got so bad. You know, I like Steve Alliquette, you know, so he usually calls it pretty straight. Even Joe Piccoletti got in on it, that he was disgusted, and you can hear it in his voice when he was doing the game. And usually those guys are always talking about the other team and how good they shoot it and how good they skate and how hard they are in the corners. And he tries to give platitudes towards the other team. Last night, finally, you know, even they... he and Sam were extremely opinionated about the performance that we witnessed last night for two teams that are fighting for the playoffs.
Similar
spots, and they're fighting for the playoffs. And the Flames last night, for anybody who cares, came off of a 6-2 loss the night before at the hands of the Maple Leafs. So you would think, obviously, they're going to be desperate, but you would think that since the Rangers had a day off, that they'd be a little bit more rested. They were so disconnected, so disinterested. I mean, if Vincent Trocheck throws another pass at one of his teammates' skates or 3 feet in front of the guy's stick, my head is going to explode. Keandre Miller, terrible last night. Will Borgen, terrible last night. Adam Fox, horrendous. The only guy that actually played last night that showed any sort of intensity or any sort of pride in trying to keep his team in the game was Igor, the goalie. And this reminded me of a lot of their performances that they put forth in December. Since JT Miller got here, they got a little bit edgier. They got a little bit better. He did raise the level of Mika Zibanejad, but all of a sudden, even he last night, he gets hit in the nuts. They don't call a penalty against the Flames. I mean, he's bent over going to the bench. He's probably got swollen nuts this morning, for all I know. I mean, it was a horrendous performance. And, you know, we were talking yesterday about the Yankees, and we talked about Gerrit Cole not, covering first base. I mean, you are in the middle of a playoff run. You've made some additions to this team. How about this? JT Miller calls one of his former teammates, Carson Soucy, and says, hey, waive your no-move clause and come to the Rangers. It's going to be awesome. That guy's buried on a bench, and he's only been here for like 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you think he's happy?
Nope.
No. His coach has got to go. This is like, I understand. Like, I always want to like be somewhat respectful to how difficult it is to deal with all of these players, whether it be the manager, Aaron Boone, we were talking about yesterday, or talking about Peter Laviolette right now, or talking about Tom Thibodeau, or talking about anybody who's a leader of a team. But you could tell that the players just either they don't give a damn or something is amiss within the body of the team that has been amiss since they lost last year to the Panthers in the playoffs.
All right, and so you just led me down the path exactly where I was going to go. I look at a team that was, I think they were 30-11 at home last year under Peter Laviolette.
And they were the President's Trophy winner.
One of the best teams in hockey, no question about it. They got out to a good start. I know you thought it was fool's gold early. You turned out to be right.
I told you it was fool's gold. I didn't like the way they were playing.
But 16-16 essentially at home now. And it leads me to a wider conversation. why is it that guys react to, and it could be any sport, they react to a head coach or a manager for a certain amount of time, and then it just becomes, no, is it on the players? Is it on, does the message just get, do they not respect him?
It's definitely on the players. Look, the Flames came in here last night. They hadn't been playing well either. And then last night they had probably their best performance in their last six or seven games. And then the Rangers had their worst performance, since the turn of the new year. But a lot of it is the coach. A lot of it, he leans on guys, doesn't give guys certain ice time, but it's always going to defer to this coach anyway, is always going to defer to the veterans in the room, that they're going to clean it up, that they're going to be leaders. And that reflection last night in the midst of a playoff push, which is not going to go deep in the playoffs anyway, but everybody says, well, you got the goalie.
Well, that's me.
I mean, you got the goalie, but, quite frankly, it's not a very physical team without Matt Rempe. I mean, they were so disconnected last night. I mean, the passing was horrendous. The defense was even worse again. I think there were at least 15 to 16, what they call, Valaquette would call a point blank shot or a grade A attempt that, Igor somehow got in front of. I don't know if it was just because the Flames suck and they don't score a lot of goals and they just tend to hit the goalie. But the Rangers last night were just horrendous.
And they didn't throw the puck at the net. They just didn't get it to the net.
Or it was blocked by.
Blocked
by, and part of really being a great point player or a player that's up around the blue line is somehow figuring out how to get the puck through. And when the puck usually gets through in situations like that, sometimes it goes in. And then you hear the announcer say the same thing. Pucks to the net. Pucks to the net. I mean, they overpass. They overpass. I don't know. I mean, Will Cooley must think that he's turning into Artemi Panarin or something. Shoot it. Just absolutely put it on net.
Don't always
try to have to make the pass. You can get a pass can come off of the goalie. I mean, I know I'm going into the weeds right now.
Well, remember we talked about. Remember you mentioned that pass can be off the goalie. Remember when they lost to, it was the Kings, I believe, right? That game winner was shot off of. God damn the goal! Oh my God, Lundqvist.
Yes,
and remember we sat there and talked about it. It was almost like that was a designed play.
Well, it is like you come down the right wing, you can't get it across because there's five guys in between you and your left wing.
So you shoot it off the pad.
And Henrik's going to kick it out. Yep. And obviously they have metrics. They have film study that they go through. It's mind numbing that the simplest thing to do is to play the game straight ahead. That's the simplest thing to do. And when you are struggling, somehow, some way, you got to find the will to play straight ahead. And if the Rangers hadn't played as poorly as they did in the month of December, I just mailed it in pretty much, mailed every single game.
One of the worst stretches they've had in a long time.
I couldn't believe the team I was watching because this is the team that I really liked and respected. It's an 82-game season, so there's always going to be downturns in the season. There are going to be ebbs and flows. I understand all of that. But this is the final 15 games of the year. You're in the midst of it, and you're trying to make it to the playoffs. And believe you me, the Garden wants them in the playoffs, even if it's for only one series. But, last night was just, it was so hard to watch. And just, I'm like, what? JT Miller was brought here to bring an edge out in players. And that was gone last night. That was completely gone. And he asked one of his buddies to waive a no-move clause, and his buddy is here, and his buddy's not playing.
And you literally uttered the words, the coach has got to go.
Which you don't do often. I'm done. Listen, I know Chris Drury is trying his ass off to try to get the team right, to get the right players in here, the right ideas, the right mindset. My God. I mean, last night was pathetic. What I am going to say is that, I did touch the money, and I feel terrible because of it. And I want to be in a good mood. And, seeing the way that they play the last two games has just been
disheartening.
It has been disheartening. And you know that Jalen Brunson's coming back. He'll stabilize the team for sure. But to lose to these teams with losing records is just amazing.
Well, so here, this was the angle, because to sit here and just break down a game, blah, blah. But this is what I don't understand. We heard the clips from Josh Hart, and I actually watched most of his little session with the media last night. And what he kept saying is part what Chris just played about how the energy's just not there. We're not playing the right way.
So here would be my question. Why not?
Well, I mean, it's an 18-game season, and there always are going to be lulls.
But if you're aware of it and cognizant of it going into the game, why can't you change that?
Because they're human beings. That's why. And it's not always going to be perfect, but you don't expect it to be this bad in back-to-back games. And I know they had to fly out to San Antonio. They had to fly back to Charlotte. It's back-to-back. It's against bad teams. You don't have your point guard out there with you. You're supposed to be better defensively when you have Mitchell Robinson on the court. It's not been the case the last couple of games. And quite frankly, it's a lull. It's coming, you know, later on in the season, which is a little bit concerning. But they can get it right. And again, going into the playoffs, that's where it will all basically flush itself out, and we will see what kind of team this truly is. Well, is it going to be a team that we truly love and respect, like last year's team, even though they didn't make it? Or is it going to be a team that's overpriced, gave up too many assets to get too many guys here, and it's a team that basically falls flat on its face?
All right, so let me put this in football terms then. Let's say back in the day, the Cincinnati Bengals play a game against the Houston Oilers, and in this specific game, you guys went, let's say, 1-for-9 on screen passes.
Did we play? We obviously were playing in the Astrodome.
Wherever you were playing.
We got our asses kicked in there all the time.
You couldn't complete a 7-yard
sounds
pass
familiar,
play.
Yeah. Sounds very familiar.
But you understand where I'm going. Are you going to tell me that following week you don't think you'd be better with your screen?
Well, better be better, yes.
Okay, so
your coaches got to practice. But here's the thing. Here's the difference, though. I just want to give you just one different thing. If you're on a really good team and you have really high-paid players, and these players are popular, and these players are beating bad teams in their own building and celebrating those wins, and then they go on the road and they lose to teams that have losing records, that's kind of inexcusable. There are serious expectations for the team. Now, if you're on a bad team, if your team stinks and you're like the Charlotte Hornets or you're like the San Antonio Spurs who are missing Victor Wembanyama, you know, you already know that your season's in the tank and you have no chance of getting to the playoffs. So you got to give both the Spurs and the Hornets at least a little bit of credit for playing hard in games that don't mean anything.
But I'll give them all the credit in the world because LaMelo Ball played phenomenal last night. Now these two guys I never heard of, DaQuan Jeffries, a JUCO college player, I don't know who he is, and this Mark Williams, they both had big games. That I expect the Knicks to handle. But my point was, if you guys struggled in one aspect of the game one week, I would expect you to be better the following week at it. What was the biggest issue? Forget how they're playing offensively and all that for a second. What was the biggest issue in San Antonio, would you say?
A lack of defense and wide open 3-point shots.
Correct. So explain to me how, and I don't want to hear about the back-to-back
and the
travel.
I'm the coach of the Charlotte Hornets. I'm saying, guys, by the way, they don't defend the 3-point shot.
And if I'm Tom Thibodeau, and he knows what he's seeing, and I'm sure they've gone over this, and I'm sure in film they talked about closeouts and perimeter defense, then explain to me how this team that's got OG Anunoby and Mikal Bridges allows the Charlotte Hornets to go 15 of 30 from 3-point range.
Yeah, well, that's the $100 million question or $225 million question when you think about how much money some of these guys are making.
Yeah, but
I swear to God, if they were all making $1 million, I would understand it, and I'd say, you know, they're trying hard, but they're just not good enough. But they're paid to be good enough.
But they are good enough. That's the thing.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's why the annoyance. That's why you get frustrated as a fan. The same thing I could say for about the Rangers. Same thing. You know, if Juan Soto goes into like a 4-week slump, how do you think he's going to be treated?
Oh, no, he'll get booed. Oh, of course he'll get booed.
I'm just saying.
We booed Derek Jeter here.
It's the gambling part of it. It's the salary part of it. And the higher the salaries get, the more expectations there are and the more intensity there is attached to a team that is falling flat on their face or playing a flat brand of hockey or basketball, which both teams seem to be playing right now.
And then the other thing, too, these starts. It's just like getting killed in the first quarter of this game. Here's Frank in North Haven. What's up, Frank?
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. How you doing?
All righty, Frankie, what's happening, man?
So, yeah, Boomer, I love you guys. I watch you guys every day.
Thank you.
And anyway, you know, getting on the Knicks, you know, I've been watching them since I was a child. You know, I'm 66. And, you know, what I see, and I'm a Rangers fan. I mean, what a nightmare last night just watching both games. So, anyway, what I see from the team is they have no bench at all. None. you know, other teams have guys that just come right in and you know, and produce.
Well, in fairness, Brunson being out does, we know it hurts them in terms of their depth for sure. I mean, you're looking at, what, Precious Achiuwa and Cam Payne? I mean, I don't even know what you would say in terms of their, Precious Achiuwa is your sixth guy for sure. But, yeah, we know that. We do know this, but they still should be better than this.
But most teams have more guys that could come in and play than the Knicks. The Knicks, and then when they don't produce, they got to put the starters back in, and I'm seeing them burnt out. That's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing them tired, lack of interest.
Frank, I'm not saying you're wrong. I you're probably right. I hate that argument. Because the same guys that are tired and burnt out in April are the same guys, or March, are the same guys that as soon as this season ends will go play in international games because all of a sudden they found energy. And I mean, come on, they're being paid a fortune.
Well, yeah, they are being paid a fortune, but
conditioned.
And I'd also say when you look at the minutes amounts played, and I know that Mikal Bridges, Josh Hart are all up there in terms of minutes per game, but so are the other great players in the league. They're all playing about the same amount of minutes a game.
And it does look like, when you look at the last handful of games, the minutes have come down. He has used more of his bench, and maybe that is the issue.
You could say whatever you want about team shooting. There's one thing that I always worry about and I always am concerned about, and that is effort. And the effort the last two games has not been there, and you could see it.
And admitted, you know, by Josh Hart.
Right. I mean, so that is a real concern because that's not what these guys are being paid for. I would also say, you know, that was like the Rangers against the Flames. No effort, disconnected, disinterested, and they lose the game 2-1. And then last night they were much better in terms of at least what I would say energy and effort and forechecking. And again, you know, they end up losing a game just because they're not good enough against top-end teams. So it's kind of like the Knicks. I mean, they're a good team. They shouldn't be losing to teams like this. But they're not going to beat the Boston Celtics or the Cleveland Cavaliers or, for that matter, the Detroit Pistons if they play them in the first round of the playoffs, if they play with this effort, especially on defense. Defense is effort. That's what defense is. You know, you can mail it in all you want because you're hitting your three-pointers, but when you're not hitting your three-pointers and you're allowing the other team open shots
and
a lot of them, and in the last two games, the teams that they've played, the bottom-feeding teams that they've played, have hit their three-point shots. It's ridiculous.
It sure is.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House of the Home Theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.